I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, thank you, Ken. And just a moment ago, you started to raise a concern that you had.
Yes, that's right. From what I can gauge, many investors believe you merely have to negotiate a good deal, appoint a property manager, and then file all the paperwork away until the time comes for you to sell. And yet, from what we've been covering here each week, that's clearly not the best way to gain the most from commercial property.
Yeah, you're right. It's never that simple. I mean, nothing really is sort of purchase, file and forget. Look, it doesn't matter what endeavour you undertake. Success requires attention to detail and diligent effort. That doesn't mean it's difficult. It just means that you need to be on top of your game. And with commercial property, as you start to build your portfolio, you will have multiple tenants, either because of the number of properties or even as the properties get larger, you'll have multiple tenants within the one property. In any event, over time, tenants come and go, and you've got to be able to release the premises. And as I said, you need to keep on top of that. Now, we're not necessarily talking about managing the property yourself. You should, and I do, with any property that I own or will own, will always have a managing agent, because that just means that I can go away and not have to worry about it. Sure, they can contact me, but if something needs to be done, they ring me, we make a decision, and then they take care of implementing, whether it's a repair or whatever the situation is. But nonetheless, you need to be abreast of what's going on. And so you need to work closely with your property manager, first in selecting them, and then once you've realised you've chosen the right one, to work closely with them and have an open rapport. Not that they're going to ring you with every thought and issue on the property. Some of them you'll give the power to resolve certain items without even referring to you, just coming back after it's been resolved in the manner that is already pre-agreed. But the fundamental thing is that you need to understand that your tenants are really your partners. I know we touched on this in earlier podcasts, but effectively, they're the ones that help pay your mortgage. And you can't ever treat tenants with disdain. They have to be, and this is not only you, it's your property manager as well, and that comes down to selecting them. I remember one particular property manager, he just thought tenants were a waste of time, a nuisance, just an interruption to the day. And his landlord clients may not have known that attitude, but it would have reflected in the attitude of the tenants would come rent review time, the amount of rent that you can get out of them. And, you know, that's the secret, you know. So, but needless to say, you need to have a system or a process in place that enables you to ensure that you can maintain a regular cash flow and as a result of that be rewarded with a good capital growth as far as your overall property portfolio is concerned.
So where would be the best place to start in looking at this system or process you're talking about?
Well, probably the first thing you need to focus on is building up your equity. Now, you can do this in a couple of ways. The first one would be to start paying down your mortgage principal, in other words, the amount you borrowed, by having an offset account and putting aside part of your net receipts each month. Now, it depends how you structure your loan, but it may well be that what you've done is taken a line of credit against your house or another property to provide all or part of the equity into the deal, and then you have for 60 or 70% of the value of the property a fixed interest loan or a loan, a commercial loan that is repayable in 3 years' time. So the ability to pay down the or repay the line of credit means that you end up paying less interest, because obviously if you build your equity up by paying down your mortgage, there's less of a meter ticking over as far as the interest is concerned. And so that means that you can then pay more each month again. And you remember that with commercial property, it's unlike residential, what you get at the end of the month, you can bank and spend because the outgoings are met by the tenant. And so what you receive is a net figure. You don't have to wait till the end of the year to work out what expenses need to be paid out of that. And I'm not suggesting you use every dollar but of what comes each month, but you balance that off so that you always keep some cash reserves. But the more you can repay off the mortgage principal, it means that you have a greater equity. And the thing is that by doing that, you're going to get, with your rent coming in, smaller amounts. You can't do anything with those smaller amounts each month. And that's why by reducing your mortgage and therefore increasing your equity, it means that that is growing over time. So at the end of 12 months or 2 years, you can redraw on that facility and, in fact, draw more on that facility because the property that you originally had the line of credit on, it's probably increased in value anyway. But you can then go out and make a second or a third purchase and take advantage of the growth in equity that you've got. Because you've got to understand, as soon as you sell a property, that incurs both capital gains tax and also it means that you have stamp duty issues. So the more you can just redraw on your equity by holding properties and just using your existing properties to finance further ones, the better. Now, the second way of increasing your equity is that the value of the property, the commercial property you've purchased, increases itself. And there's two ways a commercial property can increase, and that is through the general market improving, which is, in other words, yields firm. In other words, if you, let's say, bought on an 8% yield, the market's improved, more people have come in, they're chasing the property, therefore the selling yields have dropped to 7.5%. So that 0.5% reduction in the selling yield could add tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the value of the property involved. The second component of capital growth is improved net income, in other words, rising rentals. So as the lease increments, you have them built in most leases, either 3.5%, 4%, then you have market reviews. So it's the combined effect of firming yields as the market rises, which, in other words, yields decline, and rising rents, that combination is what provides you with your true growth. So they don't both have to move at the same time. Sometimes the yields are flat, but the rents are increasing. Yes, you'll still get increased value, but it's when the two combine together that you really start to see some growth.
Building up your equity makes perfect sense. What other avenues do you have for making money?
Well, probably the most underrated one is to study and take advantage of emerging markets. Now, what I say to people is you live wherever you find the most suitable lifestyle. And that's important, that you've got to make sure it suits the family, it suits your personal life, it suits your business life, and that's where you choose to live. But you invest where you're going to obtain the best possible return without taking unnecessary risks. And the way you do this is there's probably two or three ways, and that is to identify a market that's emerging just before most other investors realize its potential. And that can either be by way of geography or by the sector in the commercial market itself. And just by way of example, it's interesting when I look at my client base across those that I work for in acquiring property, 80% of them are from interstate wanting to purchase property in Melbourne. And it seems to be split 30% from Western Australia, 30% from Queensland, and 20% from New South Wales, primarily in and around Sydney. So what that's telling me is that they understand this principle. I mean, as most people realise just through reading the papers, that the Brisbane and Perth markets, particularly the commercial markets, are languishing. Office vacancies are up around, in Perth, 11.8, I think, probably going to go up to around 14 or 15. They're already at 14% vacancy for CBD offices in Brisbane, and that flows out into the suburban areas. Sydney's come back, and it's, I think, around 8.2%. Melbourne's about 8.5%. So they're probably both about right, because the vacancies need to be between 6 and 8% for the market to be said to be in balance. So what's interesting is that, you know, that's what people are doing. Yeah, sure, they live where it suits them up in Queensland with the climate and lifestyle and so forth. But they're recognising that the Melbourne market throughout the global financial crisis did not suffer to any great extent and has just continued on in its upward trend. Sure, it never reached the dizzy heights of Brisbane and Perth, but nor does it plumb the depths that they've done when the market turns. So that's something you need to look at, is to understand the market, but seek out areas or locations where things are happening. And this is either by your own research or probably getting advice, professional advice, so that you're kept up to date. And then the next thing leading on from that is that you need to be prepared to enter that market while others are undecided. And again, this is just getting professional advice of reading the trend and likely outcome. Now, it may be that the market you're going into moves sideways for another 3 to 6 months, but then takes off. But the beauty is that you have your position in place. You bought a good property, you have a long lease, and you can then enjoy the upward movement. As we said, your rents are built in on escalation in the lease, and then you gain the benefit of the yields falling. So you get that double accommodation. And then finally, what you need to do is make sure you sell out while most investors believe that the rising market still has a way to go. And I mean, that's just the art of buying low and selling high. It's not smart. You're never going to pick the height of the market when it turns, and nor should you worry about it. You always leave something in it for the next person. Okay, you might have been 3-6 months too soon. What's it matter? As my grandfather once told me when I was very young, he said, "Chris, no one's ever gone broke making a profit." And that's the way you've got to look at it. Never try and pick the bottom of the market. You might get in a bit early, and as I said, it moves sideways. It doesn't matter. You've got your position locked in, and you, with the right advice, bought the right property. And again, always sell out when there's a bit of blue sky above. I mean, people believe it'll go on forever. That's great, because that means, you know, they'll take you out and you will have made a good profit because you bought well. So the secret here, as I mentioned before, is to surround yourself with the very best consultants you can secure. And, you know, that's not just in property, it's in legal consultants, financial, accounting, tax, depreciation, surveyors, all the ones that are necessary to get the job done, so that you, at just by picking up the phone, can plug into their years of experience and make sure that you've always got the right team in place to second guess what you're about to do.
So you've identified a growth area. How do you capitalise on that?
Well, I think the way to capitalise on it is what I've termed super growth when we were looking at in your investment objectives. And again, there are a couple of ways to capitalise on that. And the super growth is growth over and above what the market will deliver through your escalating rents and your firming yields. And we've covered it before, but number one is, and simplest, is to subdivide your property into several smaller titles, because obviously the smaller they get, the wider your market. In other words, if it's a large lump of money, if it's a $10 million property, the market thins out. If it's a $500,000 property, a lot of buyers. So this reflects in the yield. So obviously, you can buy a property on, say, an 8% yield, subdivide it, and probably sell it on a 7.5% yield, simply because it's more affordable and therefore there's a wider market for it. So the secret is, as soon as you've settled on the property, that's when you start the subdivision plans. You don't wait, because to get your plan through could take anywhere from 6 to 9, maybe 12 months, depending on whether the council need to get involved, and there are all sorts of issues. None of them major, but they're just little red tape things you've got to jump through, or your expert consultants will help you with that getting through. It just takes time. So the time to do it is when you've got time. So commence it straight away. But, I mean, the cost of subdividing, depending on the size of the building, of course, could cost anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000. But it could add anywhere from $50,000 to $500,000. So it's a pretty good investment. That's why I guess you call it super growth. Yeah, and obviously, you know, that incremental increase is related to the initial size of the property itself. But just by being clever going in and picking the property that provides you with the opportunity to subdivide is part of the issue. And that's what I'm saying. We said at the outset, it's not purchase, file, and forget. You have a process that you need to go through, or you should be going through, to continue to add value after you bought the property. So the other alternative is to actually seek out properties that actually have impediments. Now, I don't mean that there's some physical problem with them, but it might be that they're just poorly managed. You know, the current managing agent is doing a lousy job. He's upset the tenants. Therefore, the rental is lower than what it should be because the tenants are just pissed off, and you know, there's an argument every time a review comes up. There might have even been a regular turnover of tenants. And in general terms, the property has been allowed to run down. And simply by changing the managing agent, the new managing agent goes in there, listens to what the tenant gripes are, and says, well, okay, we can fix all those. You know, the garden's over, we can fix the garden if it's not part of the lease for the tenant to do that. It may be that the facade of the building is looking, you know, hasn't been touched for a while. It's really not so much a tenancy thing. Sure, the tenants look after the signs, but they're not going to paint the outside of your building for you, or most of them won't. But just changing it, freshening the whole thing up, and just show the tenant that you appreciate them as being a partner in your investment business, then they respond. And the time to do it is not in the last month before the rent review, because that's pretty obvious. You start to do these things, not necessarily all at once, but you start to do them progressively and build up a rapport with the tenant. It might be that it's a short-term lease, and the lease is expiring. There's not an option or a market review. It's just an expiry of lease. Now, it may be that it's the wrong tenant in the building. It may be that when the tenant leaves, you just clear out the inside, remove the partitions, re-carpet, put in the latest low-energy lighting, and find a new upmarket tenant. So with relatively low expenditure from your point of view, because we're not talking about necessarily refurbishing it, we're talking about effectively tricking it up and just redecorating, you might be able to increase the rent by 10, 20, 30% just by attracting the right tenant. And, you know, you look at things like the equipment. I mean, if the air conditioning is provided by way of mechanical equipment as opposed to wall units, then if the equipment's old, it's costly. So you upgrade the equipment, improve the efficiency of the air conditioning, as I said, put in new lighting, you're going to get higher rents, but you're also going to lower the outgoings. And you might say, well, if the tenant's paying that, what's it matter? Well, it does, because the tenant looks at the total overall cost of being in the premises, rent and outgoings. So obviously, if the outgoings are high, even though they're paying them, they're going to pay you less by way of rent. So if you can demonstrate that you've shaved 10, 15% off the outgoings, well, then that will end up being reflected in a higher rent when it comes to market review.
Okay, are there any other ways to put some extra money in your pocket?
Well, probably the only thing, and we've sort of touched on it, would be repositioning. In other words, you've got an older style building and you give it a brand new image. You know, sometimes the older styles are attractive, but the internal facilities are just outdated. So we sort of touched on that. But then you might have an industrial property that, because of the change of composition and people moving into the area, it really shouldn't be an industrial building or continue to be an industrial building, particularly if it's on a corner. And as the leases fall due, you might then convert it into offices or even a retail, if not full retail, just say a coffee shop to service the other tenancies in the area. So it's just thinking outside the box and identifying what's missing in a particular area by virtue of the composition and change of occupancy that's happened over the last 10, 15 years.
I'm glad you've been able to spell everything out so clearly, as I was concerned that some of our listeners may not have fully grasped how lucrative commercial property can be.
Yeah, you know, when I first started out, I remember being told that commercial property is the highest paid hard work and the lowest paid easy work. So therefore, I guess you just need to decide which end of the spectrum that you want to be. Anyway, look, I hope it's been helpful.